Ezra chapter 6, starting at verse number 16, says, The people of Israel, the priests, the Levites, and the rest of the exiles celebrated the dedication of the house of God with joy. For the dedication of this house of God, they offered 100 bulls, 200 rams, 400 male lambs, and a sin offering for all Israel, 12 male goats, one for each of the tribes of Israel. And they installed the priests in their divisions and the Levites in their groups and the service of God at Jerusalem according to what is written in the book of Moses. On the 14th day of the first month, the exiles celebrated the Passover. The priests and Levites had purified themselves and were all ceremonially clean. The Levites slaughtered the Passover lamb for all the exiles, for the brothers and the priests and for themselves. So the Israelites who had returned from the exile ate it together with all who had separated themselves from the unclean practices of their Gentile neighbors in order to seek the Lord, the God of Israel. For 7 days they celebrated with joy the feast of the unleavened bread, because the Lord had filled them with joy by changing the attitude of the king of Assyria, so that he assisted them in the work of the house of God, the God of Israel. Almost 3,500 years ago, the Jews celebrated the first Passover. The Passover was and is the most important festival for the Jews. The Passover was a festival of remembrance of the oppression the Jews experienced while they were enslaved in Egypt, and their subsequent rescue and liberation by Jehovah. A lot of preparation and time went into the Passover. Families look forward to this celebration, along with sacrifices, feasts and rituals, and eating and joy and celebration. There was, alongside of all of that, the telling of the most important story to the Jew, and that would have been the Exodus, the enslavement, and then the rescue. Now just imagine being robbed of the opportunity to celebrate the most important festival in your collective experience. Just imagine not being able to come together and worship every Sunday. Just imagine not being able to meet with your brothers or sisters for fellowship or worship. Just imagine not being able to participate in a spiritual event with your family or loved ones. Now, wouldn't that hurt? Wouldn't that leave you empty and void? I imagine that those of you who have served in the military and perhaps have served in wars, I know that we have some war veterans in our audience, that when you are away fighting these wars on foreign lands, that you had feelings of emptiness, that you had feelings of missing some things, you know, missing the normalcy of life, you know, being able to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner with your family, being able to tuck your kids in at night, being able to watch your favorite shows, or just being able to do the things that you're used to doing, but you're away and you're fighting a war, and you're robbed of that experience while you're fighting those wars. Now imagine being a Jew, a member of the Israelite nation in 586 BC. Imagine being taken into captivity by the Babylonians. Imagine the Babylonians destroying your holy temple. Imagine being swept away from your homeland and being robbed of the joy of celebrating God in the participation of the Passover feast and festival. Just imagine not being able to celebrate Jehovah for the way he had blessed the people of Israel. Just imagine not having a temple, the earthly representation of Jehovah's dwelling. Now imagine God's grace and love and deliverance and his use of foreign authorities to aid in the rebuilding of the temple through the official decrees and through monetary gifts. Imagine watching the designs come to fruition. Imagine the stones being built up and the articles being placed where they ought to go inside the temple. Imagine the sorrow being turned into joy. Imagine the despair being turned into excitement. Imagine the anxiety being turned into anticipation of the dedication of this temple. If you allowed yourself to participate in this exercise of the imagination, you will find yourself in Jerusalem in about the year 516, 515 BC, 70 years after the temple was destroyed. It had been built back up. And on the 14th day of the first month of that year, 515 BC, which some say is April 21st, which I find interesting because that's my birthday. The Jews came together to celebrate for the first time in a long time the Feast of Feasts and the Festival of All Festivals. The priests and the Levites, they cleaned themselves, they purified themselves. The Passover lamb was prepared and presented for all the exiles. The exiles, the formerly oppressed, celebrated their return by celebrating God who had restored their land and restored their temple and their dignity. Let's stop for a moment. You know, we can never overstate that there is much to celebrate God for. Among them, God's presence in our lives gives us validation. It gives us dignity. God's presence in this church gives us reason to celebrate with joy. God's ability to rescue us is a reason to celebrate. As we considered last week, we live in God's blessing. He has blessed us with so much. He continues to bless us with so much. He desires to bless us with so much. And in response to those great blessings, we respond with joy and in celebration of our God. You see, that's what the Passover is about. The Passover is about celebrating God for his blessings. That's one of the ways that a good Jew could celebrate and show that he is a member of the Jewish nation, a member of the Israelite nation. That is to participate in the most important feast and festival, which talks about how God has blessed the people. And you see, that's one of the ways that we can display that we are blessed by God by participating in collective worship with each other. This isn't just an exercise of saying, I need to do this to check it off the list. Get that out your mind. Get that out your psyche. Understand that this gathering is a way for us to say, God is blessing me. And if God is blessing me, I can spend a few moments of our week to give him praise and worship. Amen. But celebration is but one way to respond to the blessing of God. This morning, I want us to consider another response. Celebrating God through worship is our way of acknowledging to our God our belief that he is the source of all blessing. In celebrating God, it is possible to be overheard by others or seen by others, and they may take note of who our God is, and they may even in their own experience begin to acknowledge this God, our God, because of how we've acknowledged God through our worship and celebration. And that's a passive way, and there's nothing wrong with that. But there are other ways, and here is another way that's more an intentional way of displaying God's blessing to others so that they will come to know the God of blessing for themselves. Another way to respond to God's blessing is to be a blessing or to bless others. In the book of Numbers, God gave this instruction to Moses, Numbers chapter 6. It says, tell Aaron and his sons, this is how you are to bless the Israelites. Say to them, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. And the Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace. So they will put my name on the Israelites and I will bless them. I am staring at a room full of priests. You see, we are a royal priesthood. We don't need special garments, just a relationship with the high priest, Jesus Christ. Those of you who have been washed in Christ's blood and now are in his body, you are called priests. And in response to the blessing of salvation, you should now in turn bless others. But you say, I don't know how. I don't know how to bless others. Take a hint from the instruction Moses gave to the priests of Israel. He told them to say, "The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you." A place to start with regard to blessing others is in the way we speak to each other. Words are powerful, and our speech to one another may represent some of the most powerful means of blessing others. So why don't we watch what we say and be meaningful when we say it and find ways to implement this blessing, this way of blessing. So what I'm saying here, church, is that one of the ways that we can be a blessing to others is simply by the way that we talk to each other. Some of the ways that we talk to each other, I don't think is in the vein of blessing each other. We use some harsh words. We use some harsh tones. I'm not saying that there aren't times that we need to get nitty and gritty with our words. I am saying that the majority of our words to one another needs to be words of blessing. You don't know how to bless. You don't know what it means to be a blessing to others. All I'm saying is commit to be a blessing. Start small. Start small. Just start with your words. And then move bigger. Start with blessing people in the body of Christ. Be a blessing to your brother and sister today. There's so many ways to be a blessing, and so many ways that you have here in this body at Reynoldsburg displaying what it means to be a blessing to one another, whether it's through praying for our brothers and sisters when they're hurting. You know, a lot of times we start class off or we start worship off and we begin to list and a bunch of prayer requests, you know, and different people. And some of us may say, "Oh man, we've got this long list of people." You know what? I let me just be blunt here. We need to get over that. We need to get over it. When we list those who are hurting in our body, whether it's physically or spiritual, don't you know that that's a way that we are blessing others? We're blessing others by thinking about them, when praying about them, when mentioning them by name to God, saying, "God heal, God heal, God reach, God touch, God enter, God intercept, God intervene." It's a way of blessing others. When we take a plate of food to someone who's hurting, that's being a blessing. When we sit with someone who's sick because they just need company, just to watch some TV, that's being a blessing. When we sit and we listen to someone's conversation, that's sometimes being a blessing. Start small and move bigger. Commit to be a blessing. Start by serving your brother and sister and expand the limits of your blessing to those outside of this body, as many of you do already. It may be the intentional prayer of the body for a friend or a colleague. It may be the offering of monetary help for families who struggle with health issues or families who need to eat. You know, we are living in a society where we right here in Reynoldsburg, where there are children suffering from malnutrition. Children who are getting diabetes because they're eating a lot of the wrong foods. They don't have the money to go buy the chicken breast and the fresh fruits and produce. They have to buy the chicken thighs, and they've got to buy the processed foods, and it's unhealthy for them. And there are ways that we need to be mindful and thinking about how we can minister to kids right here in Reynoldsburg who aren't eating. When the summertime comes, they're not going to have food to eat because the food that they're eating now is the food that they're getting through school. There are ways that we can be a blessing to those in our neighborhood. It may be that we are a blessing when we as a church right the things that have gone wrong. You know, a few weeks ago when we were in Winterfest, we were, Justin and Joy and I and Christy and Jenny Llewellyn, we were out at, I think Mark and Christy were there too. We were at a Mexican restaurant eating, and the waiter comes over to our table and he sees that we have these badges on from the event. And the waiter says, "Hey, what's this event? I see all these tags going. You know, well, is this like a church event?" And we said, "Yeah, it's a big youth thing going on at the convention center, about 13,000-14,000 people, and man, it's a real cool event. We're all stoked and geeky." He's like, "Oh, I was just wondering, because earlier today we had a large group of people wearing those tags and they ate their food and they left without paying." And he says, "You know, I felt really bad because I'm trying to explain to my coworkers that, you know, I'm a Christian and I didn't want all of my, you know, my coworkers to think that all Christians are this way." He said, I just think it's sad that happened. And we, you know, we apologized and we talked about it. It, you know, became just sort of a point of conversation. And somebody from our group shared that with one of the organizers of the event at Winterfest. And one of the speakers got up, and before he gave his talk, he shared that story. And then he encouraged the group there. You know, he says, "If you go by that restaurant, just go by the restaurant and display to them that what that group did earlier doesn't represent all of the church, all of Christianity, and just give them a few dollars." And later on that day, we got a report that restaurant collected enough money to pay the check of the people who left, as well as some extra funds that they used to donate to a young girl in the community that was sick, and they were raising money to help her pay her medical bills. Don't you see how the church can be a blessing through righting some wrongs? Church, commit to be a blessing. Start small and move bigger. You may find yourself using words to bless others or participating in local efforts to bless your neighbors, colleagues, and friends. It may be that you're righting some wrongs, but God has bigger things in mind. Remember, he told Abraham long ago that through him all the peoples of the earth would be blessed. Certainly, Jehovah was alluding to the fact that Jesus would come through the physical lineage of Abraham as a direct descendant. But don't dismiss our place as the people of God. You see, as the people of God, we would be used to make global impact and be a blessing all over this world. And some of you are doing that right now. Some of you are preparing to go to Honduras, and some of you are preparing to go to Guyana, and some of you have been to other places in the world. Christy's brother right now is in China. He's been in China for the past, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, and he's teaching English, but he's also leading an underground church there in China. The globe is in need of the people of God. I want you to understand that this story of Ezra and Nehemiah rebuilding the walls and rebuilding the temple and celebrating the Passover is much ado about the people of God getting right with God and getting good with God so that they could be good for the world. You see, we're no good to others if we're not good ourselves. You know, when you're on a plane, they tell you if a plane is going down and there's a chance of survival and the oxygen masks come down, what do they tell parents? Do they tell parents put the mask on the children first and then put the mask on themselves? No, put your own mask on first, because if you're no good, you're not going to be any good to your children. If you're not good for yourself, how can you be good to others? The story of Israel returning back and being restored and restoring the temple and restoring the Passover is about them becoming good for themselves, good to God, so that they could have global and good impact on others. That's why it's important for us to understand that we are blessed people. That's why it's important for us to understand that we have been given great gifts and great opportunities by God. That's why we need to understand that we need to get our lives right first before we intend for others to get their lives right. The globe is in need of the people of God to not add to the curses, but to bless. It's 2013. Advancement and development is at an all-time high all over the world. And it should cause some of our hearts to tremble when we are made aware that in 2013, all over the world, there is still the prevalence of slavery. I want you to take note of this powerful ministry that is involved in liberating young women, giving them hope, and thus being a blessing. Watch this video.
It's Sunday night. Matt and I are in our hotel in Dallas. Tomorrow we're meeting up with the rest of the Nepal team. And we will get on several different planes for like 20-something hours. And we leave on Monday morning. And I think we land in Nepal sometime on Wednesday.
How fickle my heart and how woozy my eyes. I struggle to find any truth in your lies. And now my heart stumbles on things
I'm about to show for the next 16 hours.
My weakness I feel I must finally show. Just let you fall. Lend me your eyes, I can change what you see. But your soul you must keep totally free. I feel I must finally show.